The great 20th century poet W.H. Auden once said that it helps to be a poet if you want to be a Christian. By that I take him to mean that the Christian faith makes peculiar demands upon our conceptual abilities. It helps to be a person with a well-developed imagination, to be able to receive the mystery and the wonder that is faith. I wonder if you're poets enough to hear today's gospel. If I sound a bit defensive, I think I'm justified. In today's gospel, Jesus takes a few of his disciples up on a mountain. Today's first lesson reminds us that mountains are, in the Bible, favorite locations to be encountered by God. Sure enough, that's what happens. A strange cloud overtakes them. They hear a voice, "This is my son, my beloved," and the disciples see Jesus transfigured before their eyes. It's a strange mystical vision that we hear today. And because you are modern, early 21st century people, you've got a problem with this story. How can you believe it? What's the point? How is it relevant to your life? And before we answer any of those questions, let's step back for a moment and admit, because honesty is a great virtue, that we are modern people who may be limited in our ability to think about such a story. That assertion might strike you as strange, for it is the nature of modern people to be conditioned to think we are perfectly capable of thinking about anything. We are modern, therefore not limited by tradition or superstition or ignorance or any of those bonds that limited our forebears. We are modern, therefore we stand up and we look out on the world with totally unlimited vistas. I'm wondering, though, here in the beginning of this most modern century, if we modern people aren't limited. I wonder, in our infatuation with facts and data and empirical proof, if our vision maybe has shrunk rather than expanded. The late writer Flannery O'Connor sensed this 50 years ago. O'Connor believed in grace, the action which changes a character, she said. And she understood that too many of her readers missed that in her work. She said, "Part of the difficulty of all this is that you write for an audience who doesn't know what grace is and doesn't recognize it when they see it." The physicist Niels Bohr, the father of quantum mechanics, once said that the first inkling he had about the nature of the universe came when he was a child gazing in a fish pond at his family home. For hours on end, he would lie beside the pond, watching the fish swimming in the pond. One day, he realized with a start that the fish he was watching didn't know they were being watched. The fish were unaware of any reality outside of the pond. Sunlight streaming in from the outside was, to the fish, simply an inner illumination contained within the pond. Even when it rained, the fish saw this not as an event from the outside, but only ripples and splashes enclosed in their environment. Bohr wondered if humans were like the fish in this regard, being acted upon in multiple dimensions of reality, but unaware of our limited frame of reference. As a priest listening to you, listening to myself, I believe that there's more happening in you, more going on in me, than modernity has been able to grasp. People yearn for a thicker description of reality than has been offered them by psychology or sociology or politics, or the other ways that modernity likes to talk about life. We long for more. In our better moments, we know that there's more going on in the world, more going on in us than modernity has been able to grasp. I'm always intrigued by surveys that Gallup did, showing nearly one-third of all Americans have had what they call a religious or mystical experience. Of this group, about 15 million report an otherworldly feeling of a union with a divine being. They describe such things as special communication from a deceased person or divine beings or visions of unusual light or out-of-body experiences. For instance, one said, "I was reading the Bible one night and couldn't sleep. A vision appeared to me. I was frozen, motionless. I saw an unusual light that wasn't there but was. There was a great awareness of someone else being in that room with me." And perhaps that's one of the reasons why you're here this Sunday. You have some inarticulate, nevertheless, real desire for a wider rationality. You wouldn't put it that way, but you would say, yes, I want to know more. My life isn't some psychological problem to be solved. It's a mystery to be enjoyed. It's as if there really is someone, something out there, in here, trying to get through to you. Maybe one of the most helpful things about church is that here is one place where we have the courage to explore the mystery, to venture forth into that too little discussed territory called the divine, God. I noticed her at church over the past few weeks, so I asked her, "What brought you back after so long an absence?" "A feeling," she said. "A feeling of being drawn toward something, someone, a feeling of which I wasn't really sure of until last Sunday." "Last Sunday," I said. "Last Sunday, toward the end of the service, we were all standing as usual, and the choir was singing, 'Set me a seal upon thine heart,' and I got taken up." "Taken up?" "Yep, like taken away, like I lost consciousness, maybe gained consciousness. It was as if I were alone, standing in church, just me, bathed in this soft, warm, wonderful light. When I came to, the choir was finishing their singing, and I was genuinely surprised to see people sitting there with me. And I had to regain my composure. I smiled because I knew I believed. I picture those disciples trudging up the mountain with Jesus, maybe going up there thinking that they were climbing the mountain to get a better view of the world. People sometimes climb mountains for that. In a sense, that's just what happened, but not in the way the disciples had expected. They were walking alongside Jesus, who from all appearances looked fairly much like them, a man among men, a fellow Jew, a gifted teacher perhaps at most. Then there on the mountain, he was transfigured before them. They caught a vision. They had a glimpse. They heard a voice. For one moment, the tough crust of mundane reality was pulled back, and they saw Jesus as the long-promised Messiah, the one sent by God to save. When they walked back down that mountain, they walked back down into a very different world, a world now considerably expanded. Some of you may remember my experience as a kid in the youth group in the parish I grew up in. One night we'd all gathered around the high altar of the church and the priest was celebrating the Holy Eucharist. We hadn't turned on many lights, it was just us after all, and we were standing on the steps of the altar. All the light we really had were the candles on the altar. And then the priest said, "The gifts of God for the people of God." And the spotlights over the altar suddenly snapped on and we were flooded in light. Now you might say that the timer on the lights had gotten out of sync and the whole thing was a chance event. Or you might say that we were transfigured by the real presence of Christ. C.S. Lewis, in an essay called Meditation in a Tool Shed, tells of finding himself in a dark tool shed with a beam of light streaming through a small crack in the roof. Lewis noticed, as he looked at that beam of light, he saw one thing, but when he changed his position to enter into the beam of light and look along it or with it, he saw something quite different. True, when he was not looking at the beam of light, he was no longer seeing the beam of light. He saw that which was affected by the beam of light. He saw the results of the light. For Lewis, this became a metaphor of the two different ways of knowing: observational from the outside and participative from the inside. Regarding Christianity, we might know it by looking at Christianity. On the other hand, we might know it by looking with Christianity. Modern preference, Lewis says, is looking at. The assumption is that if we look directly at something, that is the objective way, the scientific way of knowing reality. Such observation undoubtedly tells us much about the phenomenon we're looking at, but it doesn't tell us everything. Moreover, it's not the only way of knowing something. You have to step into an experience in order to see it. We sometimes know that the light of God only by seeing it in reflection. I hope that you will be prepared for such a vision when it comes your way, because with Jesus there are visions. There are wonderful, mystical, sometimes baffling, sometimes maybe even frightening moments when he gives us the gift of sight, When the veil separating us from God is pulled back, and if only for a moment we briefly see. I think of the story of the Christian writer Frederick Buechner, who was once consumed by worry over his daughter and her anorexia. Sick with worry, driving back to his home in Vermont, he pulled into a rest stop. Parked there, Buechner saw the license plate, one of those vanity plates. On the license plate, it simply read, "Trust." For Buechner, that was a revelation. A great sense of calm swept over his life, and he knew he could go on. It turns out that the license plate belonged to a trust officer at a bank who, as a pun, put his title on his license plate. He put trust on his license plates. But Buechner saw something else. Buechner saw something more. Buechner saw a revelation of the true God. Amen.